heard those rustling movements again, now going away, back down the darkened front hall. He felt goose flesh scutter down his back and sides and arms, and for a moment he almost went away anyhow. Never mind, Hopley, he thought. If anyone can find those gypsies, Kirk Pensley can, so never mind, Hopley. You don't need him. You don't need to see what he's turned into. Pushing the voice back, Billy grasped the knob of the police chief's front door, opened it, and stepped inside. He saw a dim shape at the far end of the hall. A door on the left opened. The shape went in. A dim light glowed. And for a moment, a shadow stretched long and gaunt across the hall floor, bending to go halfway up the far wall, where there was a framed photograph of Hopley receiving an award from the Fairview Rotary Club. The shadow's misshapen head lay on the photograph like an omen. Billy walked down the hall, spooked now, no use kidding himself. He half expected the door behind him to slam shut and lock. And then the gypsy will dart out of the shadows and grab me from behind, just like the big scare scene in a cheap horror movie. Sure, come on, asshole, get your act together. But his trip-hammering heartbeat did not slow. He realized that Hopley's little house had an unpleasant smell, low and ripe, like slowly spoiling meat. He stood outside the open door for a moment. It looked like a study or a den, but the light was so faint it was impossible to tell for sure. Hopley?
Come in,
the papery voice whispered. Billy did. It was Hopley's den, all right. There were rather more books than Billy would have expected, and a warm Turkish rug on the floor. The room was small, probably cozy and pleasant under the right circumstances. There was a blonde wood desk in the center. A tensor lamp stood on it. Hopley had bent the lamp's neck so that the shade was less than an inch from the desk blotter. There was a small and savagely concentrated circle of light on the blotter. The rest of the room was a cold land of shadows. Hopley himself was a man-like bulk in what might have been an Eames chair. Billy stepped over the threshold. There was a chair in the corner. Billy sat in it, aware that he had picked the chair in the room which was farthest from Hopley. Nevertheless, he found himself straining to see Hopley clearly. It was impossible. The man was nothing but a silhouette. Billy found himself almost waiting for Hopley to flip the tensor lamp up so that it glared into his, Billy's, eyes. Then Hopley would lean forward, a cop out of a 1940s film noir, screaming, "We know you did it, McGonagall. Stop trying to deny it. Confess. Confess, and we'll let you have a cigarette. Confess, and we'll give you a glass of ice water. Confess, and we'll let you go to the bathroom." But Hopley only sat canted back in his Eames chair. There was a soft rustle as he crossed his legs.
"Well, you wanted to come in. You're in. Tell your tale, Halleck, and get out. You're not exactly my favorite person in all the world these days."
"I'm not Leda Rossington's favorite person either," Billy said. "And frankly, I don't give much of a shit what she thinks or what you think either. She thinks it's my fault. Probably you do, too."
"How much did you have to drink when you hit her, Halleck?" "My best guess is that if Tom Rangeley had given you the breathalyzer, that little balloon would have floated straight up to heaven."
"Nothing to drink. No drugs," Billy said. His heart was still thudding, but now it was powered by rage rather than fear. Each thud sent a sick bolt of pain through his head. "You want to know what happened? Huh? My wife of 16 years picked that day to give me a hand job in the car. She never did anything like that before. I don't have the slightest clue why she picked that day to do it. So while you and Leda Rossington, and probably Carrie Rossington as well, have been busy laying it off on me because I was behind the wheel, I've been busy laying it off on my wife because she had a hand inside my pants. And maybe we should all just lay it off on fate or destiny or something and stop worrying about blame." Hopley grunted. Or do you want me to tell you how I begged Tom Rangeley on my knees for him not to give me a breath test or a blood test? How I cried on your shoulder to soft-pedal the investigation and kick those gypsies out of town? This time Hopley didn't even grunt. He was only a silent, slumped shape in the Eames chair. Isn't it just a little late for all these games? Billy asked. His voice had hoarsened, and he realized with some astonishment that he was on the verge of tears. My wife was jerking me off, true. I hit the old woman and killed her, true. She herself was at least 50 yards from the nearest crosswalk and came out from between two cars, true. You soft-pedaled the investigation and hustled them out of town as soon as Kerry Rossington slapped a quick coat of whitewash on me, also true, and none of it means shit. But if you do want to sit here in the dark and hand out the guilt, my friend, don't forget to give yourself a plateful.
A great closing summation.